from WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, it's Matt from Chicago. So when I go to an ice cream parlor, I always get a plain cone, which is the one with the flat bottom. And the standard delivery is to take a scoop of ice cream and just place it on top of that cone. The problem with this is that it leaves an area under the scoop with a lot of empty space inside the cone. So I would ask for the person dispensing the ice cream to take a little half scoop or a little curl and put it in the cone before they put the scoop on so that you get ice cream down into the cone, and then they can place the scoop on top. And I think it's a Sporkful standard that we'll offer to pay for a special request like that. So I'll often ask for that and offer to pay for a two-scoop price.
Right.
And my problem is that I get refused this more often than they'll accede to my request. It seems that there ought to be a law.
Well, look, I think that there are a few things that should be more pressing in the halls of justice of this country than ice cream-related issues. In general, I think you're absolutely right. I think especially if you're offering to pay more, there's no reason why the store shouldn't do it for you. One of the things that I do love about the flat-bottom cones that you're talking about, which are sort of two-tier, they have the wide top and then the kind of narrow cylindrical bottom and then flat.
Yeah.
Is that usually in that very bottom part, there's kind of like a cross of structural support.
Absolutely, yes. Beams across the bottom.
The beams, right. And that is ingenious. It adds a lot of crunch. And it is much better when there is some ice cream. Clearly, those cones are not very good on their own.
Right. And it's all about sort of lick management. As you move down the part of the ice cream that doesn't have any cone around it, you want to be pressing down to make sure that you're pressing the ice cream in the center part of the cone through that beam matrix so that you get this great crunch and ice cream flavor at the end.
That's right. But the problem is that it's hard to get it all the way down there. You kind of have to let it melt down. The only time that those cones are any good at all is when the ice cream gets a little melty and the cone kind of starts to fall apart a little bit and it gets a little bit soft and chewy but still a little crispy. I think you can achieve that, but it takes time. And the technique you're proposing certainly speeds up the process.
And I think we just need to get all behind it, write our senators and congresspeople, and really just get them involved.
I think that's right. I mean, if the two parties can't agree on this, then we are truly up a creek.
Yeah, we're an empire in decline, yeah. No question.
All right, Matt, thanks so much for your call.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. There is a lot of ground to cover here, so let's get right into it. Today's topic for rumination and mastication is burgers. And joining me for this wondrous discussion is Rev David Ciancio from BurgerConquest.com. Hey, Rev.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Psyched to be here and talk about food.
I'm very excited, very excited. Burger Conquest, I'm sure people know, is one of the top burger blogs in the entire known universe. And you have now eaten, at last count,
590. There's been one since.
Okay.
There's been one since.
Wow. So that, I mean, that is, and then there's, that's not even counting the burgers you eat as a private citizen outside
right.
of your.
Those would be 590 that I've logged, right. that I've written about, took right. pictures, explained.
Very nice. Now, you know, before we even get to that, I want to talk a little bit about entering a burger establishment and kind of situating yourself, preparing yourself for the meal. You know, you wrote in one of your posts, I was interested to see that your father was in the FBI.
He was.
And that has influenced your approach even entering a restaurant and situating yourself. Can you tell me about that?
Wow, you really have dug deep.
Yeah, that's right. It's like quasi-journalism here.
I love it. My dad was an FBI agent, high-ranking undercover, and he had weird quirks that he had picked up from being, you know, somebody who had to be undercover. And one of the things that my dad did is he always had to sleep closest to the door. So if we got a hotel, he would let me sleep against the wall or, you know, my stepmother or whatever, and I would sleep or he would sleep closer to the door because he needed if somebody somebody came in, he wanted to defend us. At the same thing, he couldn't sit in a restaurant if his back was to something exposed like a kitchen or a glass. He always had to have it against a wall or with a few amount of people because he would just get nervous. And I picked it up from him for some reason. It's one of those things my dad was like, you know, watch your back, be careful, don't do this, don't do that. And
right. But was there ever
an actual incident that you were present for when you were with your dad?
You know what? There never was. Not an incident.
So when you go to a restaurant, like your father, you prefer to have your back against a wall so no one can sneak up behind you, basically. Is that right?
I don't have it to the extent that my father did.
Okay.
And I've since become married, and so the wife's preferences always win. Right. And she wants to sit against the wall. So I guess as long as she's okay and she tells me they're coming, right. We're all good.
Does she have as good of a reason as you do for wanting to sit against the wall?
No. It's purely some level of vanity, I believe.
So you've eaten now 590 burgers as of this moment.
Yeah.
It could be, by the time this airs in a couple weeks, it could be
a lot more.
You might have passed the 600 mark. So let's start off talking about burger perfection. You sit down to eat a burger, burger number 591. What are you looking for? What are your criteria?
All right, so there's a couple like must-haves, right, that it go in any language, in any burger, it doesn't matter. It has to be fresh, not frozen, right? You cannot do a frozen burger. Ideally, if that can also be in-house ground, even better. And if not, if it can be ground as quickly as possible to your mouth that morning, the day before, stuff like that. The patty can't be too overformed, right? So if somebody handles it a lot, or they mash it a lot, or they smush it a lot, or...
Yeah, you talk about this a lot on Burger Conquest. You're always talking about how much space and air there is in the patty. Why do you feel like that matters?
Because what happens with – if you have the right – blend, well, so you know we're getting to another part of it. You need to have the right blend of fat to lean meat. Right?
Well, yeah.
If you have the right blend, right, as you're cooking, you want the juice to stay inside the burger. And you want it to be able to move around and stay juicy. And if it doesn't, there's no room for it to breathe. It'll just stay trapped in there. It'll squirt out. You'll get a hole. You'll lose it. And so you want that juiciness to stay there. At the same time, you don't want a burger that's really coarse when you bite it. You don't want to bite into like a dry sponge. You want to bite into like a pillow. You want to bite into a cloud. You want it to literally just like softly fall apart in your mouth. And if you handle it too much, you cause too much mouthfeel.
A beautiful, soft beef cloud.
Yes.
Is what you're describing. It does sound really good. I think that 80% is the max I want to go to for
the lean
80-20 ratio. Do you have a thought on that?
You know, it's argued. I've had 75-25 and been pretty impressed with it. You kind of have to know what you're doing when you're handling the burger then. And I've had 90-10 and not really my thing either, but you can offset that. Adding bacon adds juice, adding cheese adds juice, adding onions. There's other ways to counteract some of that. Definitely 80-20 is the standard.
I think there is such thing as too much fat, but is there such thing as a burger that is too juicy?
You know what? No.
Burger to bun ratio.
So important.
Big, big issue. I think that I would probably say that I want roughly equal parts burger and bun, which is to say not that both the top and bottom buns are the same thickness as the burger, but that the top and bottom buns together are the same thickness as the burger. What's your thought on that?
You know what? It's funny. Each burger denotes a different type of bun to me. So like a slider needs to be on a white squishy bun, right? It needs to be the same circumference. And it needs to have just enough, enough structure to hold its way through the sandwich. But if I'm eating like a fancy chef burger and you want to put it on a brioche, like, okay, that's a little more chubby of a bun. It's a little more sugary. It's a little more constructed. And so to me, it sort of depends on burger to bun. You never want to be taking a bite and only get bread and toppings. That's just a big no-no.
Yeah. No, that's disastrous. And I should be clear, when you say the word slider, because some people associate that with a tiny 2-inch in diameter burger, you just mean a burger that's on the thin side, for lack of a better universal comparison, like a McDonald's burger except good.
One thing that makes me angry about the world of eating is when somebody calls a burger that is just a smaller version of a larger burger a slider. It is a mini burger. It is not a slider. A slider is a particular preparation. You know, you wouldn't call cassoulet a soup.
But now that term has been taken. Now you'll see pulled pork sliders and you'll see fried chicken sliders. I mean, I can see you getting red in the face.
It makes me so mad. Like, I just hate it. It's so incorrect. And for a society that's so obsessed with food. We know the difference between margarine and butter, right? We know the difference between canola and olive. Why would we not label correctly mini and slider? See, now you've hit the button.
Yeah. Is there a general – I mean, give me a ballpark here on what your ideal ratio would be.
You want slightly more bun than burger, just slightly.
Interesting.
Because you don't want – here's the other thing too. So you don't want to bite the burger and then have it come out the other side. Then you're holding like a piece of beef or bacon and you don't – every bite needs to have equal bite to bun, you know, bun to burger ratio.
Well, that – we're skipping ahead a little bit here, but that's a perfect segue to one thing I wanted to talk about, which is a recurring topic here on The Sporkful, and that is the issue of bite consistency versus bite variety.
Ooh, interesting. I like it.
All right. So, you know, some foods you want every bite of the food to be the same. Other foods you want to mix and match, you know. I got a theory on my burger preference, bite consistency versus bite variety, but tell me yours.
Wow, I actually even don't think I've ever contemplated it in that
wow,
fashion.
Wow, this is great. All right.
No, I don't want it consistent, and here's why. Because a perfect burger should be seared on the outside and, to quote Judas Priest, screaming for vengeance in the middle, right? And so I want the outer part to be a little more crunchy and seared, and I want the inside to be a little more juicy and medium rare.
I tend to agree. I think that I – the way I would put it is that I want bite variety from the burger patty, but bite consistency with regard to the bun and topping ratios.
I can agree to that.
Okay.
100%. Right. Especially good. Cheese. Cheese needs to be on every bite.
That's right. That's right. And well, another great segue, do you ever eat hamburgers without cheese?
So this is a good question. I will order the burger based on how I want it unless it's chef suggested. If the chef says, hey, you should have it this way or this is the way we prepare it, I'll try that because I assume that they've gotten it to a level that they're kind of happy with it and I sort of trust them to do it. If it's up to me, it has cheese.
Right. I have to say, with all due respect to those chefs who would suggest that I should eat a burger without cheese, I mean, there's a lot of really talented chefs out there, but there's also a few duds.
I mean, yeah,
let's
I agree.
Face it. You know, and I mean, to me, with all due respect to my kosher and lactose intolerant listeners, a hamburger is an incomplete food, I feel like. I mean, I don't understand why the Hamburglar was always trying to steal hamburgers. Like, I would think that he already has enough hamburgers. He should be, like, kidnapping Mayor McCheese and try to get him
to the cheese.
To get the cheese. Like, that should be the crime spree that they're worried about in McDonaldland.
I can't think of a burger that I really, really like that doesn't have cheese on it.
I want to ask you, Rev, I've spoken here on The Sporkful before about a rather innovative strategy to burger preparation that I'm not sure if you know about it.
I'm all headphones.
Cheese on the bottom.
Oh, that's not innovation. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Excuse me?
Sorry to cut you off. I firmly believe cheese on bottom.
So I guess you must have been listening to The Sporkful before and you heard me invent that and be the first one ever to say it.
Oh, yeah, you can have it.
When was that invented then?
God, I have no idea. I remember being a kid and accidentally getting one like that and was like, how come we didn't do this before, Mom?
Well, I'm still going to take credit for it if that's okay with you.
I'll give it to you.
But when you're at a restaurant, do you flip the burger? Do you eat upside down?
I get brought a plate, and the burger is not assembled. And on one side, I have a bottom bun with the patty exposed and cheese on top. On the other is lettuce or whatever, and underneath that is the sesame seed top.
Right.
In that case, I will flip the patty so the cheese is touching the bottom bun and then just put the sesame seed on top.
So you keep the bun right side up.
Right. If it comes prepared, I won't flip it. If the cheese has not already touched bread, I will flip it.
Okay.
Because once the cheese has touched the bread, it has to be there. You can't move it.
That's true.
But if it came the other way and the cheese had already touched the sesame seed top, I wouldn't then just hold the sandwich upside down.
Okay.
The sesame seeds have to be on the top.
Oh, see, I will.
You'll just eat it upside down?
Upside down. That's
right.
I
won't do that.
Interesting. The only problem with that is that you end up with more bread on your tongue. I mean, obviously, the reason why we put cheese in the bottom, for anyone who couldn't have figured it out at this point in the podcast, is that it brings the cheese closer to your tongue and accentuates cheesy goodness. It also, by the way, creates a seal along the bottom so that as juice is pouring downward, you get less bun soggage.
Yep.
Because the cheese holds that juice in.
Scientifically and tastefully, it is the way to go.
Right. But then if you flip it by hand and you get the domed top part of the bun
on
the bottom, it is a lot of bread. It's not ideal. So now I want to talk about grill versus griddle.
Okay. I want a burger medium rare. I don't care what method you – I don't care if you hold it up to the sun or put it in a, you know, an empty Pringles can on a hanger. I want it medium rare. right? And so in the flat top griddle, which is my favorite way to prepare it, getting it medium rare is almost impossible because you're using such a small patty and like a slider that to get it medium rare, it's like there's nothing in the middle to be medium rare anyway.
Right.
But every once in a while, you can find a chef who can get at least some pink in the middle still. I'm blown away by it every time I eat one. When you put it on the broiler, juice falls out. When you put it on the grill, juice falls out. And look, I love a backyard barbecue burger as much as any other burger, but if you really want to get down to the perfect burger, it has to be on a flat top.
Interesting. I'm a rare burger kind of guy, so I would go even a little more red than you. But do you agree with me that anyone who would have their burger cooked more than medium doesn't deserve good burgers?
Unless it's a slider.
Okay, all right. Like, right. Unless the burger is so thin that you don't have a choice.
Then I would agree.
Okay.
That would be – so I grew up under two grill masters. It was my father and my stepfather. And my father always wanted to make burgers and steaks in the backyard in medium rare, and my stepfather always wanted to make burgers and steaks in the backyard well done.
Did that difference in steak cooking approaches have an impact on your relationship with or perception of your father and stepfather?
You know what? My stepfather wanted to eat his steak well done. He still does, and I'll never understand that, but – there was one thing that my stepfather taught me that my father didn't, and so the redemption goes backwards, is my stepfather taught me the secrets of seasoning. My dad would just put the burger on. He liked the meat like it was. Give me a piece of cheese and a bun, and he's happy. My stepfather was all about, like, you know, let's pour some vino on this. I'm going to come from an Italian family. Let's crack some pepper. Let's get some white pepper. And so I have an obsession with my spice cabinet as much as I do the butcher shop. And so it comes from either of those influences.
So in some ways, your perfect burger actually was sort of like a confluence of what of some things you took from your father, some things you took from your stepfather.
And my mother. So here's the other thing. If you're getting way deep into the burger ethos here. My stepfather didn't like sliders. He actually would just rather have a steak and a glass of wine. He was a big, big Sicilian man. And my mom, we grew up in Detroit, so we had Bray's and Bates and Dave's Hamburgers and, you know, Motz's Burgers and Miller's and, like, tavern-style, slider-styles. Like, that still is today in Detroit. And so every time my mom wanted one of those, she would take me, like, okay, Davey. She didn't call me Rev, obviously. Davey, let's go get some sliders because I knew it meant something special. It was my birthday. It was my mom's birthday. It was Christmas. And so I still, every year at Christmas, my mom and I go out for burgers. So it's a three-pronged approach. I got the seasoning from the stepfather, enjoying, you know, properly cooked beef from my dad, and then enjoying sliders, which is actually my favorite style of burger from my mom.
One of the tips that this may be old hat too, but I picked it up from – I deduced it from looking at the pictures of that Luncheonette burger in Mill Basin that you had – was rather than mixing in the salt and pepper and whatever into the meat and then therefore handling the meat and mushing it all together and losing that spacing that you say is so crucial, it looked like he put the burger on the griddle and then just sprinkled the salt and pepper on the top.
That's a proper way to do it.
That way you don't need to handle the meat hardly at all.
Yep. That's a proper way to do it. It's going to end up cooking in, and then when you flip it, it's going to get into the sear, which is what you want anyway.
And then do you only salt and pepper one side?
No, you definitely salt and pepper both. In that second flip, though, you don't leave it on that long. So you don't put as much salt and pepper on it.
One of the other things they did at Luncheonette that was also in the pictures on your blog was that they put the burger down on a griddle and then gave it a sort of a bacon moat.
A bacon halo.
Yes, a bacon halo around the – and that, so the bacon, I'm sure, released its juices that were then soaked up by the burger. There are some people who favor depressing the center of the patty so that it's not an equal – the burger's not an equal thickness – all the way around. If you'll imagine that you're looking at the burger from the top down, imagine if you have concentric circles like it's a target and the middle of the burger is thinner than the exterior perimeter. People say you can do that so that the interior center circle area will cook through to roughly the same temperature as the exterior perimeter circle. To me, that goes against what we just discussed about bite variety in the burger patty itself. How do you feel?
I agree. I want the inside of that burger to be as, you know, close to rare as possible. But I want the outside as close to burnt as possible, and so that's medium rare. And I don't understand why somebody would do that.
One of the things that people talk about with regard to the patty formation is putting things inside. I'm not talking about seasonings. I'm talking about physical things.
Stuffing,
exactly. Bacon, butter. I've seen people say put butter patties in there. Onions is a pretty common one I've seen out there. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, like, look, you know, if you've ever had the, you know, a Juicy Lucy from Matt's in St. Louis, which I haven't, but I've had that style done, it's pretty awesome to bite into a burger and there's this, like, molten lava of goodness in the middle. I've had stuffed burgers that were amazing. I've had stuffed burgers that were horrible. To me, it is a little bit like a discovery. And if you've ever cooked them at home, they're actually not easy to make at all. They're really difficult to make. And so somebody that does it the right way, I'm super into it.
What about with things just sort of chopped up and dispersed throughout the meat?
So it's more like a meatloaf?
I know a guy who would just chop up onion and put and mix it into the ground beef.
Yeah, it's more like you might as well just give me a meatloaf then. It's not a burger. I recently had I went to a restaurant and they let me have a little bit of artistic liberty and they said, look, you've eaten everything here. You've been really good to us. What do you want? What's the one thing we haven't done that you would like done? And I said, I would like a turkey burger stuffed with a beef burger. And they were like, of course. Of course you're going to come up with, like, we're thinking you want to, like, saute the bacon or, like, you know, upside down buns. Something weird. You're like, no. Of course you come up with something we're going to do. I was like, no, think about it. Turkey burger has to be done well. Beef does not. If you stuff the beef in the turkey and you cook the turkey well, the middle is still rare. And then, again, bite variety. And they were like, all right, we'll try it. It was awesome.
Really?
It was so good.
And I'll bet that beef helped juice up that turkey.
Yeah, it was awesome. And they're like, cool, don't tell anybody about it. We're never doing it again.
I had some Texas brisket, and I took the brisket fat and mixed it in with a burger.
Oh,
and it was good, but, you know— maybe it was just too much smoke and the fat didn't disperse through the meat. Like maybe I should have cooked the fat separately and then poured it into the burger meat rather than trying to get the heat of the burger to melt the fat because it didn't fully melt. I think maybe more work is required there. I think buns are probably the part of the burger equation that people give the least amount of thought to, and I think that's a real problem in the burger world.
I agree.
I think that the perfect bun is buttered and griddle grilled. Not only because butter is great and things that are grilled are great, but also because it makes the bun more durable. What do you think are some of the common mistakes people make in bundom?
I would agree with you on the griddle thing. Again, with the exception of sliders, I want a white squishy bun where it's steamed in the onion juice and like it's just a big fluffy soft mess. Other than that, I want it toasted and buttered. I kind of like it a mixture, and not a lot of people do it, but I like a mixture of butter and olive oil. Right, it almost gives it like just a slightly different flavor and a slightly different seal. I'm also Italian, so I want olive oil like in my coffee, you know.
Right.
I also hate it when people think they just have to use a brioche because it's fancy.
Yeah.
Like I don't necessarily need – like you can chef up a burger all you want. It doesn't have to be on a brioche. Do the bun that's right. If a multi-grain bun is the right bun, do that bun.
I agree with that. And I will also say if you're just making a burger at your house and you're just going to the plain old supermarket – just get a potato bun.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with potato rolls.
Okay, time now for the lightning round, Rev. I'm going to say the name of a food with the word burger in it. I want you to give me your one-sentence opinion on it.
I'm not sure how many foods have the word burger in them, but let's go.
Turkey burger.
I love turkey burgers, and I found that I want a turkey burger that's made of a mix of dark and white meat.
First of all, I would say, why white meat?
Because it just tastes different. I like the taste of white meat, but I appreciate the flavor that dark brings to it.
I would say all dark meat. But do you agree that a turkey burger is not a substitute for a beef burger?
No, it's a turkey burger.
Kobe beef burger.
You know what? The Kobe beef burger thing is interesting to me. I don't know that feeding beer to a cow and massaging for its whole life makes a burger that much better. I've had like ground chuck burgers that pretty, you know, kind of just blew my brain to pieces. I think it's a waste of your money. I really do. And unless you – and look, here's the thing. It's not Kobe unless it's from Kobe, Japan. I can – graze a cow in Long Island City and, you know, massage it every day and feed it beer and let it run in circles. It's not Kobe.
Right.
It was just treated well.
Right. And frankly, because it's going to be so much fresher and locally sourced. I mean, to me, that is the number one thing. I have a hard time believing that beef that's been shipped here from Japan is going to be as good as beef that's been driven to you from down the street.
Agreed. And you, Kobe fan?
I think it's overrated. It's just a lot of hype. It's a word that gets slapped on a lot of things. Plus, I just feel like, I mean, a burger was invented. It's something to do with a lower quality of beef. If this is this amazing, godsend, from the heavens type of beef, then shouldn't we be eating it with nothing else?
Yes, it should be a steak.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Next one, ostrich burger.
I love ostrich burgers. I really do. I don't eat them all that often. I don't feel like anybody's like taking the time to perfect them. But I'm not afraid of one. They're pretty good. A little saltier than chicken, a little saltier than turkey, you know?
I got to disagree with you on that one, Rev. Okay. I think that they are way too dry.
Okay.
I mean, I've never had a juicy ostrich burger, have you?
I said nobody's perfected them, so I wouldn't hunt it down.
But I feel like that is an inherent flaw. I don't think it can be perfected as you and I would use the term.
Maybe.
That's my argument.
I don't hate it on the ostrich.
All right. Last one, veggie burger.
I'm a fan. By the way, you should know something. I believe that all burgers have a place. I even like McDonald's. In fact, the McDonald's double cheeseburger is the perfect ratio of patty to cheese to bun. They nailed it. Everybody should go eat that burger and understand why beef, cheese, and buns are correct.
Wow. Well, you cannot accuse us of pretension here on the Sporkful, that's for sure.
But you know what? Again, if it's just a Morningstar Farms patty and you got it from the store and blah, 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 you're serving a veggie because you need one, I'm not going to eat it. But if you've taken the time to make something that is delicious, I appreciate the culinary aspect of it. I just don't see it as replacing a beef burger to me. It's its own food item.
I agree 100%. Same thing with a turkey burger. Sometimes I actually am not much of a fan of turkey burgers. I'm more of a fan of veggie burgers, but in either case, these are different foods. Yep. And I have no patience for people who say, oh, you know, taste this turkey burger. I can't tell the difference. You'll think you're eating a beef burger.
That's wrong.
Right. If you think that, you have waited too long to have a beef burger. Well, Rev David Ciancio of BurgerConquest.com. Check him out on Twitter at BurgerConquest. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me in the Sporkful. This is really fun.
Hey, don't forget that I'm looking for callers for upcoming episodes of The Sporkful. If you have a rant, an innovation, a debate that needs settling, if you want to take issue with something I've said, drop me a line at dan@sporkful.com. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.